Welcome to Hawk Weekly.
I'm Jonathan.
I'm Crystal.
And this is Haunt Weekly, a weekly podcast about the haunted attraction industry, covering everything from your mega haunts to your home haunts. Whether you're an actor, owner, or just aficionado, we are aimed to cover you.
We should really put that part into the intro so you don't have to say it
every time. I rather enjoy saying it. It gets me psyched up. It gets me pumped to do the episode. It's like, yeah, we're doing this.
Yeah,
dude, we're going to be talking for like 50 minutes. I need to get amped, man. You can't just not with my ritual. But yes, we are back.
Yes.
And, you know, we are back home and from HauntCon. We returned from HauntCon, and that's what this episode is all about.
Yes. So if you're not interested in HauntCon, then you can skip this one.
I would hope that if you're interested in the haunted attraction industry, Haunt Condo would hold.
Right, and if you listen to us anyway.
Yeah, so basically you're probably going to stick around.
Yeah.
I think. And
I would hope so.
I got to say, I know we're going to go into a lot of detail about Haunt Con and what all we did and said and learned and really, really interesting stuff. But, you know, I really had a great time overall. I just want some general thoughts and feelings. I rather had a great time of it. It was exhausting.
Yeah.
Damned exhausting.
Yeah, no, it was a very good time. Well, we were also still getting over our cold.
Yeah.
The tail end of it.
Yeah, we had a handicap there.
But, no, it was a lot of great people. You know, still think the haunt community is one of the best communities out there. It was a lot of fun. It was nice to see a haunted house in January.
Yes, it was, and that's one thing we're going to be talking about.
Yes.
Excuse me. We're still getting over the colds a little bit, so if you hear the occasional... that's what's going on.
Yeah.
But, yeah, so we, I don't know. It was an incredibly good conference. Like you said, the community really makes that conference. I mean...
Right.
Because, you know, the Sheraton, while overall pretty good and fed us lots of bacon... Which is always a nice way to treat your conference attendees is to feed them bacon.
Yeah.
You know, I heard some grumbling about the location, but really, you don't go there for the location. You go there for the people, and the people were amazing.
Yes.
And that's always my favorite part. And it's great because we went last year.
Correct, because it was in Baton Rouge.
So it was in Baton Rouge. We literally didn't even get a hotel. We just drove back and forth every day. It was fine.
Yeah, it was 45 minutes. So.
It's about 90, but, you know, it was not bad. It was more than doable.
Yes.
We had time on our hands at that particular moment. But, yeah, so, I don't know. It was a lot of fun. And the thing about it was compared to last year was we met what felt like almost completely different people.
Yeah.
There were some people, like Dr. Brian Jackson... who I'll talk about in a minute, that I met last year and got to meet again and hang out with. But I know a lot of the same people were there, because that was the first topic of conversation, is, did you come last year?
Yeah.
The answer was usually yes, but it felt like we met all new people.
Yeah, it definitely did. I think last year we got a lot more people from Texas than this year. And as far as the attendees go, I seem to notice a stronger presence in the business classes than in the creative classes. And last year it was a lot of really small haunts and, you know, home haunters
who were
going to those creative classes to get cheap tricks on how to...
Mind you, those are some fun tricks. But
oh, yeah.
Yeah, this year it definitely felt like we had more professional haunts. I would say more mid-tier.
Right.
Haunts. We didn't necessarily have the big mega haunts there.
Right.
But we had a lot of big decent-sized mid-tier haunts, high-end charity haunts, professional haunts that are sort of bursting onto the national scene. There's a lot of haunts, especially some of the speakers were from haunts that, while maybe not well-known nationally yet, probably will be in 5 years or so.
Yeah,
they're real. These haunts are really ramping up and doing some very interesting things, And so then that way you feel like you're kind of ahead of the curve when you come to these.
Right.
So to quickly recap, HauntCon was between January 28th and February 1st, 2016. It was in Birmingham.
Yes.
Which was a 5-hour drive for us here in New Orleans. And it did, like I said, it shifted the geography of who came. We got a lot more of, like, Tennessee, yes, well represented this year. Of course, Alabama was, Mississippi. And also on into, like, the Midwest and so forth was well represented this year.
Right.
So, I don't know. I really enjoyed it. And, yeah, I'm looking forward just to doing, like, a teardown of everything that we saw and did while we were there.
Okay.
What you people missed. Well, we got there in time to the first haunt tour.
Yes, the Insanitarium.
Yeah, and I don't want to talk too much about that because I think we're going to do a garbage horror thing for it, so...
Yeah, so you can watch the live review over there.
Yeah.
But it was a great time. It is a charity haunt.
Mm-hmm.
They use the funds from that haunt for all sorts of things in their community.
Yeah, and it's interesting because it's a knockdown haunt.
Right.
It's one they tear down after season. And you might note that we're here in January, late January, going through it. They had to hastily reassemble significant parts of it.
Right. I believe all of the parts inside, because it's held in a gymnasium, partly inside of a gymnasium, partly outside.
And inside a school, too. Yeah.
Right. So I think the inside was probably what was torn down inside of that gymnasium. So they could hold other functions for the town, because it's like the town meeting place.
Yeah, and the only thing I have to say is, Victoria, call me. I love you, Victoria. I love you.
If
not creepy at all.
No, especially, you know, I'm hoping that Victoria is one of the older actors. She was very cute. We do know that there are a lot of teenage actors in there.
This could be really creepy.
Yes.
It could be really creepy really fast, if I'm wrong.
Yes, it could.
I'm banking on that.
But no, I mean, they did a great job with interesting scares and layout and design.
Yeah, it was a very interesting haunt from a tactical standpoint.
Right.
I don't think you're going to get a lot of, like, because it's a knockdown haunt, it's part of the problem.
Yeah.
You're not going to get, like, a lot of cutting-edge decorations or special effects. But from a tactic standpoint of using actors and using them well,
right,
it's one of the best I've been to.
Yeah, and you know how we have that, one of my pet peeves at a lot of haunted houses is that they don't have anything original?
Yeah.
That's not something I'm going to say about this haunt.
No, they have tons original here, and you can tell that they've thrown a lot of creative energy into this.
Right.
It really does show. And it was a great haunt to go through, too.
Yeah.
It was
a lot of fun. It was a great way to kick off the conference.
It was. Great kickoff. So, let's switch gears and start talking about our main focus. We went to a lot of the classes. We focused...
Yes, we did.
And basically, we had... The two of us had the 3-day pass.
Yep.
And we split up.
Yeah.
Each of us took one class. So basically, we were able to cover 2/3 of all the classes because there were 3 main tracks. There was also the workshop track. We didn't do any workshop track stuff. But 3 just like educational tracks. We did 2 out of the 3 every time, pretty much.
Yes.
So, Friday, I started off, I was in the business track, which was fitting enough. And there, it was... Haunted Farms of America were put to talking about contemporary tips for a powerful haunted website.
Yeah.
And I have to be completely honest about this. My talk was coming up next.
Right.
My brain may not have been totally focused.
Yeah, there were some issues. So,
there were some minor issues. All sorted. But, But the main thing is, it's very hard to focus when you know you've got to get in front of that same crowd in about like an hour from now. But yeah, they had some pretty good tips. I mean, I've said it before on this podcast, and I've said it before elsewhere. The haunted attraction industry needs to get its digital game going,
right?
As a whole, and I found it because a guy that has been doing websites now for 20 years, is it?
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, it's about 20 years. I found it to be kind of basic, but I also understand that we kind of need that as an industry. It may not have done me a world of good, but I'm hoping other people in that class got some great takeaways.
Right. And on the other side, I was in a haunt high tech. Basically, it was all about building a brain for your haunt to run all of the lights, the sounds, the triggered props, things like that.
Boo boxes and things like that.
Yeah. By InTech was the company putting it on. They talked about it in such a way that I could understand it because I don't know a lot of the high-tech terms. That's why I went to it. It's because it was the one that I knew the least about.
Yeah.
And I think I got some takeaways that we'll be talking about using.
Yeah, and this kind of shows the divide in the haunt industry. Because, like, in two separate rooms, you've got a super high-tech talk about digitally operating your haunt and creating a brain for it.
Right.
And on the other side, you've got a very rudimentary talk about building a website and online marketing and all that. We do digital so well when it scares people.
Yeah.
We do digital so well when it's powering props, when it's creating effect. You know what I mean?
Well, and one of the main things about that is that, and this is something that will tie into two of the other talks I went to, is that having a brain that controls everything is the easiest way in an emergency situation to flip a switch.
Yes.
To have it go, to have all your house lights come on and show exit signs and stuff like that.
Yeah, you just wire your alarm system to one of the inputs.
Right.
And when that input is activated, it automatically, you know.
Exactly. So, I mean, it makes a lot of sense to wire everything in.
Yeah.
It really does.
It does, yeah. And this is, like I said, we're really good at that type of digital.
Yeah.
We really grok that, but we don't grok websites. We don't grok online payments.
No.
And I'm sure we're going to talk about Haunt Pay at some point as we go, either this episode or a future one. We're going to talk about online payments in general.
Yeah.
And we might touch on it briefly here.
You went to their talk, so I'm sure
we will touch
on it briefly.
You know, but I got to say, the Haunt Pay talk said very little about Haunt Pay.
Right.
So.
Okay, anyway. So I will take second. My second talk was from a line actor, and he was giving...
Well, the second talk actually was mine.
Okay. Yes. Yes, the second talk was yours.
Yes,
second talk. Sorry, I didn't take notes for yours, because I know you.
Like, I've heard this. Rebel, rebel, no. Second talk was mine. Mine. I talked. I did copyright and trademark for Haunters. And I think I did a-okay, actually. I'm pretty happy with how that one went.
Yeah, I think that's the biggest crowd for a multi-track conference I've seen you gather.
Yeah,
lots of great questions.
And it was especially interesting because it wasn't early talk.
Right.
A lot of people were either on the bus tour, the two-day bus tour that we didn't do.
Right.
Or they were at the Insanitarium, which we did do, meaning they were out silly-ass late.
Yes.
And a lot of people hadn't showed up to the conference by then, let's be honest. The crowd got thicker as the day went along, which is, that's typical. That's just conference life.
Yeah.
So, yeah, I think I had a pretty good crowd. Filled out the room nicely.
Uh-huh.
A lot of great questions and feedback and interaction. And the part that made me the happiest, both happiest and most frustrated in the same breath, was that people were constantly coming up to me the rest of the conference talking about copyright and trademark. Obviously, the topic struck a nerve.
Yeah. Yeah, it's definitely something the industry needs to think more about. Yeah.
I won't recap the whole talk because if you go to plagiarismtoday.com, it is on there. I've got the slides. I've got Crystal here shot a video of it.
Yeah.
And I've got my handout, which that was one of the problems was the handout it got lost in the digital ether, basically.
Yeah.
That's all it is. And these things happen. I mean, it's like I told, you know, Leonard and other people, if that's the worst thing that happens to me at a conference, it's a pretty damn good day.
Yeah.
I'm not kidding, so...
Yeah.
I've done enough of these to know that it could have gone a lot worse.
Yeah, and in fact, there was so much interest in it. We're thinking about doing, you know, a copyright minute or something on this podcast. So if that's something that you're interested in, let us know, and we'll start looking
and
at it.
I am considering... I haven't made a commitment one way or the other to myself or anyone else, but I may be applying to speak at Chicago Frights. I almost called it the wrong thing.
Yeah.
Chicago Frights. The idea has been mentioned. There was some interest expressed, but they want a different talk than the one I did at HauntCon. They want one more oriented toward Halloween fans.
Right. Well, so, and you're not really known for self-plagiarizing in your talks anyway. You're always going to get something different with Jonathan.
Exactly. And that's the thing is, I wouldn't mind doing one. Like, I've written a whole bunch of articles on plagiarism today about how copyright shaped, you know, vampires and zombies. So I'm thinking maybe combining those into a single one-hour talk could be interesting.
Yeah.
There's plenty to talk about.
Oh, yeah.
So anyways, my talk was next. Go to plagiarismtoday.com for the slides and all that yummy, yummy goodness.
Yes.
I'll put a link in the description. Your next one, yeah.
Yeah, basically it was from a line actor named Tater.
Tater.
he was a traveling actor, which is a very interesting idea to me. And he builds characters and haunted houses hire him to play those characters, basically, and he goes wherever he's needed. It was an interesting talk. He was an interesting guy. But there weren't a lot of technical tips.
Yeah.
So, other than, you know, vocally warm up your actors, get a backup plan for your actors if they blow out their voice because they don't have any speaking abilities, you know, they don't have any training for, like, vocal training.
Mm-hmm.
Things like that. And most of it was just really funny stories, you know, including about how he got banned from a haunted house.
Mm-hmm.
For shooting off an air cannon, and Granny goes, "I just gave you a blowjob." So, yeah, somebody was upset about that. But that's basically what that was about.
Yeah. I actually had Opening a Haunt for the First Time, So Your Experience Isn't Incredibly Frightful, by Dr. Brian Jackson. He was one of the ones I had met. He runs the Derailed Haunted House.
Right.
I'm trying to remember where that is. I don't want to... It's in Radnor, Tennessee. Mm-hmm. Couldn't remember the town name. I knew it was in Tennessee. I just couldn't remember the name of the town. His basic talk was about, you know, it was kind of these are the lessons we learned and going pro the first time. You know, I really enjoy him as a person. He's very engaging to talk to. He's obviously not the most comfortable public speaker.
Uh-huh.
Which is not a huge crime, but it was a pretty cool talk. And that being said, you know, it's always interesting to me to hear, because we're talking about going pro. And so to hear from people who made the leap and are reflecting upon it, it's very, very fascinating to me.
Right.
And... yeah, his talk was really good. I've got his handout here in this pile, and I haven't had a chance to pull out his specific notes. But all in all, great talk. I don't really have a lot to pull from it.
Mm-hmm.
Main thing is the one thing I did think was really cool, and now I've got his notes in front of me, was he provided me a list of questions that you should ask yourself before opening a first-time haunt. Hand that to Crystal here so she can look at it.
I will be perusing looking that. At that.
He provided a copy of his operating permit.
Interesting.
And my favorite thing was he provided, from the state of Tennessee, this is a memo from the state's fire marshal. And basically, it's how many pages is this son of a bitch? It's like 5 pages.
Mm-hmm.
But it's all the building codes that they have to follow that year.
Oh, wow.
Yeah. Here's the problem, though. Crystal, will you kindly read the date on that memo?
September 18th, 2012.
Your haunt built by... Your haunt is finished by that point. If you're opening for the... I mean, ours isn't because we only open 4 days. But if you're opening a professional haunt, your haunt is done by then.
Yeah, well...
That's a little late.
The thing is that if you're opening the last week of September, you have to have the fire marshal out 2 weeks before you open.
Yeah.
For a final thing but, like this.
Yeah, but that memo is after when that should have happened.
I understand.
This is
but
one...
if they're not opening till October 1st, then...
I mean, and that's one of the recurring themes, and we're going to hit on it over and over and over again, was make the fire marshal your friend.
Right.
I agree. Buy him beer. Buy him... Take them on...
get to know them very well.
Have a bromance with them.
Yeah, this turns into... This runs into my... talk that I went to, which was on fire safety by Greg Winslow. And it was, I felt bad because he was up against Leonard Pickle.
Yeah, and that was the talk I went to.
Right. And there was a lot of interesting stuff to learn.
Yeah.
He gave information about which fire codes are the most important from the NFPA.
Mm-hmm.
And where to find them online for free at the NFPA's website. They have now opened up their books, so to speak, so that you can get all of the critical ones for free instead of paying hundreds of dollars for them.
Oh, that's actually really which nice. Oh, that's great to know.
That's awesome.
This is why we're doing a HauntCon episode.
Yes.
A, you and I get to exchange stuff that we hadn't been able to previously, and our listeners get to enjoy the same benefit.
Right. And if anyone's if anyone's interested, that's going to be NFPA 1, NFPA 101, and NFPA 113. That's the fire code, the life safety, and the sprinkler system documents.
Oh, that's interesting. Thank you. That's great to know.
See,
Haunt Weekly, learning useful stuff. That's how we roll.
Yeah, in the past 30 years, fires at amusement attractions has dropped threefold.
Wow.
So these
So it dropped to a third of what it was.
Right, exactly.
Which... that still sounds too high to me, but...
but it's a lot...
lower than it was. And part of the problem is, realistically, if you do all the stuff that we learned at HauntCon,
mm-hmm.
and you fireproof all your crap, and you do everything properly, starting a fire in your haunt's pretty damn difficult.
Right.
It really is. But the thing is, we still have a lot of haunts out there that are in locations where they're able to play fast and loose with the fire marshals,
right.
and they do so.
Right.
Much to everyone's detriment, including the rest of the industry.
Yeah.
So don't do that. Don't be that guy.
Yeah, I'll get to that in the last talk that I went to, actually.
Yeah, okay.
And there were three types of fire detection: photoelectric, which is detecting slow burning things very well; ionization, which is reacts better to fast burning fires, that's like your
smoke detectors,
and heat detectors, which basically do no good in a fire because there's a plug in them that has to melt before it goes off. So if it's hot enough to melt the plug,
you're fucked already.
It's probably too late. Yeah,
it's hot enough to melt the peoples.
Exactly.
So, yeah, that doesn't do a lick of good. All right, so thank you. We know which two to choose.
Yes, exactly.
Photoelectric and ionization. There we go.
He also talked a little bit, real quick, about combustion interruptus. Mm. Basically, fire retardant, and how to make your haunt more fireproof.
Mm-hmm.
It's not exactly fireproof because it has to catch on fire to burn. To work, to activate.
Worst fireproofing ever. It has to catch on fire to work.
Yes. Well,
but I get the point is made.
Yeah. Because basically, and he showed a picture. It was really cool. The fire retardant paint that you put on,
mm-hmm.
whenever it catches fire, it activates a foam inside of it. So it gets to be about a foot and a half thick.
Weird.
It was super cool. And showed, demonstrations of different things burning with and without, and actually gave us paper.
How many conferences can you go where people are setting shit on fire on stage?
Okay, so he couldn't do that. He tried, but the fire marshal wouldn't let him.
Oh, boo!
Yeah, I'm trying to find real quick.
Are you sure it's the fire marshal, not the Sheraton, that said no?
Well, you know.
Same thing for our purpose.
Somebody did. He also gave a formula mm-hmm. for different types of that you
a spray retardant.
Spray retardant.
So you can make
it at home. Yes, and we'll put that in the notes.
Yeah, I'll put that.
I'll send it to you so you can put it in the notes.
Okay, fair enough. the talk I attended, and I debated which I was going to go to. You knew you were going to that one. That was,
yeah,
you had that one picked. I ended up going to Leonard Pickles, and I hesitated not because I thought it was going to be a bad talk, but because I went to a very similar talk of his last HauntCon.
Right.
And I hate repeating myself.
Yeah.
You know, but he actually gave a very different talk this go around. There was a lot of new information in there. It was entitled Haunt Design Do's and Don'ts, Avoiding Common Errors That Decrease Haunt Effectiveness. It was actually really, really interesting. And a lot of it was stuff that I think most of us already figured out. The era of having skits and scenes in your haunted attraction is done.
Yeah.
Your throughput is shot. If you do that, you have no capacity. You know, act, and he talked about things like having actors block doorways or being menacing.
Yeah.
It's stuff like that. And one of my favorite things he talked about, though, was, and this is, I know we have this problem because we have such a small haunt. There's no real, we don't have room to fix it.
Right.
But we see it in a lot of bear haunts that clearly do. They'll have the ability to trivially see from one room to the next.
Right.
And that's, and he talked about how you can use separation hallways to address that.
Mm-hmm.
Talked about how you don't paint walls black if you want to paint, if you want to have black walls.
Yeah.
Use dark purple or blue. Mm-hmm. They stay darker longer. They don't gray out. But also, it's just, why would you, it's wasted space. Anything that's black is a hole.
Yeah, well, and that's one of my pet peeves, too, is that if you can't decorate and light a scene to hide your scare in plain sight, and you have to use, here are the things that I hate to see. Black walls, strobe lights, and overused fog machines. If you have those, yeah.
Yeah, we're gonna have a problem.
Yeah.
Okay, so my next talk after Leonard was Creative and Affordable Marketing for Haunts and Halloween Events. This was the last talk on Friday. This one was done by Scare LA, David Marklin. And, you know, it was actually pretty interesting stuff. He talked about he talked a lot about tracking.
Mm-hmm.
His focus was heavy on tracking. You should be tracking who's coming to your haunt,
right,
how they found you.
Right.
And you should be getting all the information you can. At the bare minimum, you should be finding ways to get their name and email address so you can have contact with them. And he's very heavy on email address because Facebook and all that's great, but now you're using someone else's platform. And you're at the mercy of Facebook decides tomorrow to never show your posts unless you pay. Suddenly you have to pay to access the list you worked your ass off to create.
Right.
So that's that type of stuff. He was very focused on that. He had some great, my favorite part, honestly, and this is something I think I am going to implement and use. He had great suggestions on how to cheaply make commercials and videos for your haunt.
Oh, very cool.
Focused on sites GraphicRiver.net and VideoHive.net, which where you get templates for commercials, and you just stick in the video that you shoot.
Right.
And it has all the effects. It has the transitions. And you can do, I think, a two-minute story or a 30-second commercial. It's very cool stuff. So I was actually very, very excited about that. But yeah, it was a lot of guerrilla marketing type stuff, how to do PR properly. One suggestion they had was invite your local newspaper to send someone to scare people for a night.
Yeah.
Put them in makeup and get some great photos of them. That kind of stuff.
All right, cool. Sounds useful.
It was.
My next talk was by Scott Swenson of Vault of Souls in, down in Florida.
Yes, and this...
And this was casting and training.
Yeah, it was a Vault of Souls was a very interesting attraction.
It's a very interesting idea. It's not one that I've heard of anywhere else. Basically, it's a theater performance with
interactive
with free. It's hard to describe. Just go to the site and look up how they sell it for themselves.
Basically, it's really expensive. Tickets start at like $100.
Yeah, they start at $100. They go to $400, but it's a very classy kind of event.
You will get booze. You will be serenaded by cellists and pianists and things.
Right, and there's valet parking.
Yeah, It is the most upscale haunted attraction-like experience I think I've ever heard of.
Right.
And it's kind of weird because, you know, one of the themes that recurred in HauntCon was capacity and throughput.
Right.
Getting people into the haunt and getting them through.
Yes.
One of the things that he basically said, screw capacity and throughput, raising the ticket price.
Right. We're giving limited number of people.
Yeah, we're intentionally limiting capacity and throughput.
Right, so that makes it a rare event, you know. So that, and there's also a game element in the, because there's a 1,000 square foot, I think that, mm-hmm. no, 12,000 square foot basement that's non-linear, and you can go in, you're encouraged to pick up everything, read everything, and get the story that way. But this isn't about the Vault of Souls. It was about casting and training.
Yes.
And he had to find 1,000 performers whenever he worked in an amusement park every season.
Yep.
So, because they did double cast so that they could have cast swings and scheduled breaks.
Mm-hmm.
So they would get 500 people to be in the house at any time and 500 people to switch out with them and train them all for the exact same role. So, that was interesting. There was some tips on how to do that better. You know, work with local schools, colleges, not high schools, because there are labor laws to contend with.
Yeah.
With anyone underneath 18. Advertise in June. Perform auditions. In fact, we had an audition done in the classroom. As well as vocal and mental exercises for your actors. Yeah. So it was really cool.
Yeah.
I enjoyed it.
Okay. Now we'll go fast forward to Saturday. We got to pick it up a little bit more.
Well, we might have to do this in two parts.
We might. I think we can get the rest of it in. My first talk on Saturday was one I went to begrudgingly, but actually really ended up enjoying and learning a great deal. And it was starting a nonprofit haunt.
Right.
By the people behind Ruby Falls Haunted Cavern and the Fear Connection. The long and short of it there is people immediately think charity haunt, therefore it's not a business.
Right.
Basically, their approach to it was that the only reason they were able to open was because they paired with a charity. Because what you basically do is if you donate more than 50% of your revenue to a charity,
right,
you will be classified as a charity haunt. And the idea is that a charity, you partner with a good one, can bring enough to the table to make that worthwhile.
Right.
They can help you find a location that you can use for free. They can, you know, bring you actors, a certain number of actors. And they can help with marketing promotion and even get you free materials to build your flipping haunt.
Right.
So, I mean, basically, you know, you have to think, and the main thing they said is you have to think about it this way. Will you spend more in rent, materials, and all that jazz than signing over that check to the, that big check at the end of season to the charity?
Right.
If the answer is yes, you would, then A, you're supporting a charity and a great cause, and B, you're probably saving money and maybe actually be making more money at the backside.
Right. Yeah, and that's something that was in the talk I went to, which was bringing life to new old props, or bringing new life to old props, rather.
Mm-hmm.
My notes got flipped around. And it was done by the Birmingham Zoo. It was taught by that. They have a spooky zoo exhibit every year. And there were some great tips about, you know, how to find broken mannequins. Because most stores, retail stores, have them.
Yeah.
You just have to bug them for them.
Bug, 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 bug.
Yes. She mentioned, great stuff, so they sent her 12 cases of great stuff to use. hopefully the fire retardant guy.
Yeah, hopefully there would fire retardant.
Because the non-fire retardant guys can burn really, really fast, and because it's basically fuel and oxygen in one form.
Yeah.
So don't, use it. Don't use it inside small spaces unless you get the fire retardant kind.
Yeah, which is much better for our purposes.
Yeah.
There's more you want to say on that one?
Yeah, basically it was just a demonstration kind of class, how to make some cheap molds using using milk cartons on a heat gun.
Mm-hmm.
Put it over something you like. Put the milk carton, half of it on there, and then heat it up, and it'll vacuum seal kind of to the mold. So it was interesting.
Yeah.
Some good cheap tips.
Yeah, my next class was Escape the Negative, Starting Your Own Escape Room. Mm-hmm. I've taken a lot of fascination, like a lot of the industry, with escape rooms, so I was really curious about it.
Right.
I think the talk was kind of mistitled.
Okay.
Because it wasn't really that much about starting an escape room.
Right.
The best and most interesting parts of it to me were talking about potential puzzles you could use in an escape room. Like one of the ones he said, take a nail polish remover, write on a mirror, and when you breathe on the mirror, what you wrote will be visible, but it's invisible when you're just looking at the mirror.
Right.
Stuff like that was really, really cool. And the guy who gave the talk is a magician, at least in part by trade. So that was where he was coming from with a lot of this. It wasn't a whole lot about how to actually, you know, start or build one, but some neat ideas to include in your escape room.
Okay. I attended several makeup tutorials because that's another area where I really need to step up the game or at least learn how to train somebody to do it better for us. So I went to one, and I have to put it in the notes. You know, we should just put a link to the schedule at a glance, basically.
We will.
But so I'm sorry I don't remember your names. But it was interesting. Obviously, since it was makeup, I can't really tell you much about it other than Barbasol is amazing at removing any kind of things that stain you. Yeah. Just the Dollar Shave shaving cream from the dollar store. Mm-hmm.
Also great for hiding dinosaur eggs.
Yes, takes off blood stains, takes off all sorts of things.
That's interesting, though. I would not have thought of using shaving cream for that purpose.
Right. No, I wouldn't either. And actually, at work today, got spray paint on our hands and had some Barbicide, which is the active ingredient in Barbasol.
Yeah.
Used the wipes, and it got spray paint off.
Wow.
So,
I'm impressed.
We were really impressed at how well that worked.
Yeah.
Yeah, one of the really good ideas, or two quick ideas, is test your new actors, for latex allergies. Put a dot on their arm, let it sit for 15 minutes. If it turns red or gets irritated at all, don't use latex on them.
Obviously.
Yes, but a lot of people don't think to test latex allergies. And make sure to keep all of your brushes clean and sterile for new people. And that's about it for that one. Okay.
What was your next talk after that?
Mine was how to make a sock mask.
Yeah, you were not thrilled about going to that one from the title, but...
I wasn't, because I guess I didn't understand what a sock mask was.
Yeah.
I was thinking of those pantyhose ones that you can buy that have the face on them.
And we like to put them on dummies in our haunt sometimes.
Right.
Because they are creepy. Yard.
They,
but they're also trivial to make.
Right.
You don't need an hour lecture.
Yeah. So this one was basically you do take a pair of pantyhose and you cut it, but then the foam appliances that are usually a once-use things, and they're really expensive, actually, you can apply them to a pantyhose mask and affix them and cut them up and stick them to each other to make a very customized mask to fit whoever you want to make it
fit. I thought that was a really cool idea, actually.
Yeah.
I went to the online ticketing one put on by the CEO of HauntPay, and most of the conversation actually was not about online ticketing, which was kind of disappointing.
Right.
But it was more about general website design and digital marketing, a lot of talk about Facebook, a lot of talk about things to do with your website.
Mm-hmm.
And, you know, I do want to talk more in detail about HauntPay at another time for another episode. But, yeah, I'm not convinced HauntPay is the ideal service for haunted attractions.
Yeah.
I think they're fine. I think they're good. I'm not, you know, upset with them or anything. It's just the only thing that bothers me is they keep pitching themselves as a free service when the whole idea is, oh, you're just going to pass the cost along to your customers.
Right.
That's not a free service. I mean,
right.
It's not even really free to you, because how many customers turn around and leave because of that upcharge? But that's stuff for later. Stuff for later.
So,
go ahead.
I had adding elements to increase revenue with Scott Swenson, mm-hmm. once again from Vault Souls. Another interesting talk. Basically, talked about, do you sell alcohol, do you not, for VIP experiences? Make sure that it is a VIP experience.
Yes.
Give them something more than just a cut in the line.
Yeah, please, for the love of God. I agree with that one.
Yeah. He was talking about even VIP lounges and stuff where you can wait for your turn in a lounge-type setting.
Get some of that boxed wine.
Yeah, which would be awesome. T-shirts, obviously, pins, buttons, old props that you can write up a certificate of authenticity and sign the prop. Yeah. Things like that.
Excuse me. The one thing I think, and this is something I just ran across my mind,
mm-hmm.
is... you could do like what a lot of video games have done with their special box editions where you right. get a bunch of random crap in it.
Yeah.
Something like that would be cool.
Like a grab bag?
Yeah, like a grab bag thing. And it comes with stickers. It comes with a tiny statuette. It comes, you know what I mean?
Yeah. And he was mentioning that for VIP, because if you're upselling properly, that t-shirt and stickers and buttons and stuff are going to be free to you, basically.
Yeah.
Especially exactly. if you sell it right,
exactly.
People are thinking they're getting, you know, things for free that you paid a lot for, but a 25-cent button is not going to, break your bank.
Yeah, my talk was about creating memorable storylines and characters, once again by the Haunted Cavern / Fear Connection people. It was kind of basic, I admit, because a lot of haunts, it's become obvious to me from this HauntCon, a lot of haunts don't think about characters and storyline much.
Yeah.
That's like, so it had to be kind of basic, but I had an, damn it moment while I was in this talk.
Yeah.
Which is, he said, if your haunt has a big marquee character, that marquee character has to be there every single night.
Yeah.
And my brain went, damn it, that's me! For four nights out of the year that we do now as Abbott Home Haunters, it's not so bad. But if we're opening 16 nights a year as a pro haunt, I'm gonna be screwed. So that made me realize I need to train someone else to be Bernie, or find someone else who can take the character in a pinch. Luckily, we have the other thing they talked about their covers. If you have that marquee character, what happens if something goes wrong in the haunt and you're that marquee character? I'm like, oh, that's easy. I've got a general on the inside.
Yeah.
I run the outside. She runs the inside. You know, that's how we separate our duties.
Yep.
And it works pretty good, damn good.
Yeah.
But anyways, so that was my moment there.
Yeah. Honestly, this next one was a how to do makeup in 20 minutes type thing. I remember he had a hashtag of Team Kyle, and it was interesting how fast he did it. Basically, he took Pro Air airbrush paint in a spray bottle, a small pump mm-hmm. spray bottle, and sprayed to block out the face.
Yeah.
The problem was, when he did that, the volunteers were complaining about it burning their eyes.
Ah.
He told them to blink faster.
That's terrible.
So that's all I'm going to say about that.
Move on.
I'll be putting pictures up about the finished results. The finished results did look really good.
Yeah, we'll put them up on our Facebook or Twitter.
Well, yeah, I'll be putting them up on Facebook, and you can tweet them out if you want.
Sounds good.
But yeah, the results did look really good, but I don't think there was enough attention paid to your actor, because your actors are your gold.
Yeah,
that's one of the things repeated over and over.
Yeah, that's, I think, just a universal truth.
Yeah.
The last talk Saturday, for me, guerrilla marketing in your haunt. It was actually interesting. It was from a guy who has been involved in the haunt industry like 30 years, I think he said.
Mm-hmm.
So it was a very interesting perspective, and it was pretty cool. But it retread a lot of the ground from the other marketing talk. But one of the things he was really big on in his talk was... cooperating and collaborating with other haunts.
Right.
Offering discounts, combo tickets, and things like that.
Yeah.
And he would run promotion. Like, my favorite promotion that he ran was, I'm trying to remember that this was, I went to several marketing talks. I'm trying to make sure I've got the right one.
Right.
But if I recall correctly, he had a haunted hotel attraction, and he made the deal, anyone who can stay the night gets $1,000.
Right.
And everybody had to go to, like, this other business to put their name in to be picked. And basically, they chose 10 names. They called everyone. Only 3 people answered the phone. Of those, one person was too young and was disqualified. That meant 2 people actually tried it. One person was disqualified for cheating halfway through the night, and one person did it. And the thing is this, yes, they paid $1,000 to that person, but they got way more than $1,000 worth of promo out of it. And they also got to have a lot of fun with their actors, because they're basically what they did is they chose their 6 best actors from the year. Those 6 actors were offered $500 for each person they scared out.
Right, and then everybody knows that they can get an extra $500 the next year
if they do a really good job
exactly. Every season.
Exactly. So that was pretty cool.
Yeah, that sounds cool. My first talk on Sunday was about webcasting, because the talk that we wanted to go to was not. There was some kind of emergency. You actually wound up in what happened in that classroom. With the sliding actor.
Yeah.
They had some kind of emergency and the regular speakers couldn't be there. So I went to the webcasting thing, and it was by Dr. Tara Rise was giving it. And if you've used a web slinging gun before, you pretty much know what I saw.
Yeah. And I went to the one about sliding actors, and they didn't, like you said, there was an emergency, and the people who were going to do it were not there and could not do it. So I ended up, but they ended up getting another, because they're talking about the sliding actors with the people that, like, literally slide on the ground.
Mm-hmm.
If we saw it, I think the first place we saw it was actually the darkness in St. Louis.
Yeah.
And it looked really cool, and that was one of the things we kind of, maybe not implement, but maybe find ways to take advantage of some of the elements of it.
Right.
So I'm too goddamn old to be sliding. Let's just be honest here. I'm going to be 36 when haunt season starts. My knees are not good for this. But the point of the matter was, the people who were going to give it an emergency had to leave. So this is like my nightmare as a public speaker. He gets hauled in before the crowd. Yes, he knows the topic. Yes, he can talk about it. But he has zero preparation and zero time to prepare. So he's tap dancing. He's doing everything he can. And it basically, though, it broke down into just a good conversation about sliding.
Yeah.
And that was actually really cool, because the guy from
Scott Swanson.
Yeah,
from the Vault
of Souls, was there. He trained a lot of slider actors in his previous gigs. And so it was really just a very interesting conversation about a very fascinating topic.
Right. My next one was code compliance, and this is fire in building code compliance. They had a building code inspector there to give this talk, and it was interesting, but basically it came down to, it's a state by state, area by area,
yeah,
and just get to know your
fire
marshal. It's
basically like me trying to talk about trademark.
Yeah, because your fire marshal is going to be the one who, you know, coordinates between all the different agencies and makes sure you're in compliance with all of them.
Yeah, he's your buddy.
So that's what it boiled down to.
Give him love.
Now, I think we've got time for a real quick story.
Okay, go ahead.
He did tell about a volunteer fire department's haunted house.
Oh, yeah.
That was shut down. It was Titus Maze of Terror. It was a charity haunt. They had 35 things wrong on their compliance. Basically, the fire marshal showed up to go in through with the chief of the volunteer fire department. And they got to a room where he's like, okay, which door do we go through? And the chief goes, I don't know. He's like, no, seriously, which door?
Joke's over.
Yeah, joke's over. He's like, I don't know. So he's like, okay, we're shutting this down for right now. And they didn't actually shut them down. They gave them a list of things that they need to be in compliant with. The fire department, the volunteer fire department chose not to follow those.
Yeah, they were threatened with criminal liability. Remember?
They were threatened with criminal liability if they continued to operate as they were, because one of the things you would think of that a volunteer fire department should know is to have fire extinguishers. They didn't have fire extinguishers, and they had combustible materials stored inside the haunt.
Yeah.
So
it was a big mess.
Yeah.
And, you know, we've been like Lafitte Fire Department here in town.
Right.
Yeah, that's not fire code compliant. I'm about 8,000% sure of that.
Yeah.
But, you know, it's one of those things where you just kind of assume the fire department knows what they're doing. The answer is not always.
Yeah.
No, it's not always. You went to her talk last year, the Evil Queen, as she calls herself. Beginner's Guide to Building Prop Building Basics on a Budget. She is from Hawaii.
Yes.
Which means getting stuff like latex, getting stuff, you know, the professional stuff is really difficult or really expensive.
Right.
And the result of that is she's gotten really good at building things out of cardboard and butcher paper and things like that. She builds a fairly large haunt on a couple $100 budget, basically.
Right.
Using nothing but cardboard and paint.
And backyard.
Yeah, backyard.
It's not enclosed.
It's not enclosed. Now, the thing about it is, all I can think is I could destroy her entire haunt with a cigarette lighter. Because she says it herself, she doesn't do any fireproofing or anything because she's an outdoor haunt. She doesn't have to. But still, I'm like, I can't use these in my haunt because...
Yeah.
But still, she really is damn good with cardboard.
Yeah.
I mean, it's really amazing what she has learned how to do. I personally can't work with cardboard. I hate it as a material. Not just for fire reasons, because I hate it as a material.
Right.
But she is, like, whiz at it. And you know what? I have followed her on Garage of Evil site.
Yeah.
And I will be keeping in touch with things she builds, because it looks really good. And you can make cardboard stuff that people can stand on. It's really cool.
Yeah.
It's just I can't use it in my haunt.
Right.
Anyways.
Okay. Yeah, my next one was how to set up a makeup room.
Mm-hmm.
And it was interesting, and I'll be looking to find a key makeup artist for us.
Yeah.
Because they will know all of this stuff already, hopefully.
Hopefully, yes.
Yeah.
It was an interesting talk.
It was.
But, so, we're getting to the last two talks.
Right.
My next one was music theming, killing the music monotony, and I was so nervous going into this one.
Right, because I went to a similar one last year, and the guy was, you know, promoting Pirate Bay for music.
Oh, my God. Oh.
Yeah.
Oh. I was so scared. But no, this guy was the composer. He actually composes the music for the Insanitarium, the haunt we went to on Thursday. Really, really cool dude. His name is Justin McElroy. Really cool dude. Really awesome with his work. I regret not getting that CD when we were at the Insanitarium.
Yeah.
I honestly do. He had some really great suggestions on where to find free and public domain music, including some resources I didn't know about.
Right.
Which is pretty damned impressive.
That is.
So he had that, and like I said, just generally great tips from a copyright compliant standpoint. And I got to say, I was really impressed with his knowledge and how smart he was. I've got his card, and I will be contacting him. He is a cool, cool dude.
Sounds awesome. I went to a zombie makeup tutorial with the guys from Rise.
Mm-hmm.
Basically, I went to this one because they're local and I wanted to support them.
And, of course, Rise looks at us and they're like, yeah, you're those guys, aren't you?
Yeah, pretty much.
you're those assholes.
Their key makeup artist only started last season. And it was fairly basic.
The talk
was fairly basic, and I don't know that I got any really interesting tips out of it that I didn't get elsewhere. But I am willing to put all of my notes together in a more comprehensive format,
mm-hmm.
with the correct titles and author presenters' names, if you guys want to see them and read them for yourselves.
Yeah, there's requests, yeah. And I've got my Google Docs, too. Basically, I did not take notes
mm-hmm.
when there were comprehensive handouts available, because it seemed redundant. But if there were not handouts available, or they were not particularly, you know, big or full, I took notes in a Google Doc that I can trivially share.
Right.
The last one for me was Lessons Learned, the Trials and Tribulations of Opening a Haunted Attraction. It was done by Kevin Irvin of Damn B Haunted Village. It's D-A-M-B, not the damn that I use all the time on the show.
Right.
Basically, it's a small haunted attraction in West Texas, in rural West Texas. And, you know, I the talk kind of blew me away a little bit because he made some pretty nasty mistakes. I mean, like, he talked about how he's been in operation 5 years. They've only had 4 injuries.
Yeah.
And I'm sitting there, wait, I've been doing this 10 and have had 0.
Yeah.
I'm not saying I have the safest haunt in the world.
Right.
But we haven't had anyone. We had a couple really good scares.
Yeah.
We've had more than a few good scares.
Yeah.
But no one actually hurt, thank you God. And we work hard to keep it safe. So that, but like, not using pressure treated wood that for that's going to be outside.
Yeah.
Permanently. That's
basic.
This is some basic stuff here. And the thing that got me about him was he's a very successful businessman. He runs a machine shop, has 5 employees, obviously does very well for himself financially, making some very, very, very stupid calls with the haunt. This is nothing he didn't say. Yeah. I'm not insulting him. This was how he worded it.
Oh, okay.
His word's not mine.
Yeah.
I'm just agreeing here.
Yeah.
I'm openly agreeing with him, but yeah, he ended up wasting a lot of money on injuries that were avoidable, rebuilding things that shouldn't have been, that could have survived multiple years, things like that.
Right.
And that was basically what the talk was about, was don't be an idiot. And he encouraged everyone to get an outside consultant if you're going pro. He used Leonard, but he said just, you know, get someone
who knows a little bit more.
A little more than you, especially if you've never opened a haunted house before.
Right. All right, final thoughts?
Yeah, overall, it was a very good... The information, pretty much every talk was good.
Yes.
I don't think I had a single talk where the info was bad.
Right.
It's obvious not everyone is a public speaker.
Yes.
And that made some of the talks a little difficult. But that being said, when you've got good information survives bad public speaking.
Correct.
And that was what happened a lot at HauntCon in my experience.
Yeah.
Was people were struggling and obviously not comfortable in front of a crowd, which is weird because we're in an industry where everyone is a performer to some degree. So it seems kind of weird. But point of the matter is, it was a very, very... All the information was pretty good. And, you know, I don't really think I have a class I regret going to. I think there was at least some takeaway from each class. Something I was able to take that was new. I mean, even like Leonard's class, which I had been to last year, was new enough and had enough new information to completely justify the hour.
Yeah, sounds good.
Yeah, so all in all, it was a great HauntCon. Met a lot of awesome people. Looking forward to reaching out and contacting some of them over the next week.
Right.
And yeah, just a lot of fun. It was a good time, and the only complaint I've had, and I think we said this previously, is that HauntCon, everything is bought separately.
Yeah.
Which is kind of weird.
Yeah. I mean, that's part of the reason we didn't go to all of the haunted house tours.
Yeah.
Is because they were separate and they were pricey.
Even if you had your own transportation.
Yeah.
So, that kind of got to me a little bit. I think the tours would do better if they were included in the price. Like, raise the price of the seminars and the education and the trade show. We didn't talk about the trade show floor already.
Oh, shoot.
Damn. Well, we've got a couple minutes here. It was interesting. There we go.
Yes, we got t-shirts from one of the vendors.
Yes, one of the vendors, New Republic, I believe it was the name of the company.
Yes.
We bought 20 t-shirts from them for $106. We had to get some of the extra large sizes.
Right.
Those were $1 more, but it's normally $5 a shirt.
Yeah, which is great.
Yeah, it's a great deal. And we just got them in on Thursday. The quality is good.
Yeah.
I mean, I'm not a judge of quality screen printing. Yeah. I have no idea, but it looks fine to my eye.
Yeah.
So that was good. We also,
picked up a couple of knives. They had a weapons booth.
Yeah, not actually selling any props, though, which is...
Right.
So she was struggling a little bit there. They had the slam wall, the drop panel vendor.
Yes.
Remember them? How could you not know they were there?
Yeah.
Constantly showing off their wares. Yeah.
Yeah.
So, yeah. All in all, it was a pretty cool trade show. It felt smaller this year than last year.
The puppets.
Oh, the puppets people were there, yeah.
And there were a few zombies from Walking Dead there.
Mm-hmm.
Trying to think of anyone else. The person who gave the suck mask speech.
Yeah, was there.
Was there selling masks.
And Haunt Pay had a prominent booth.
Yeah. I'm sure there were others and that we're forgetting, and sorry.
Sorry, yeah. We didn't spend a lot of time on the trade show floor.
No.
It wasn't as large as it was last year. And where it was positioned was kind of weird.
Yeah.
I mean, because...
And we also didn't stick around for the garage sale.
Yeah, we honestly...
Or
do the
ball.
Yeah, well, I had a ticket for the ball. I could have gone.
Yeah.
But I was just wiped between... Thursday night, Friday day, giving my talk, going to all the other lectures, and being bombarded by excellent copyright questions,
yes,
left and right. I got back to the hotel room to change.
Yeah.
And...
Yes. Yes, you died.
I was unstirrable.
Yes.
So, yeah. I can't comment on any of those things. I heard the ball was great from other people and that I missed out, and that's cool.
Yeah.
But no, I think it was a great HauntCon. I really love the classes. I really love the education. Mm-hmm. And I love the camaraderie. We're an industry that doesn't look at our colleagues and think competition. We're very geographically disparate. And
right.
Also, we know that real competition to haunted attractions are other things you can do instead of haunted attractions.
Right.
Because what's the first question everyone asks when they leave a haunted attraction?
Where's the next one?
Exactly. So we have to, cooperation makes sense in our industry, and it's nice to see it happening.
Yes.
Well, that's all I've got.
Me too.
So on that note, everyone, I'm Jonathan.
I'm Crystal.
And this was Haunt Weekly, talking all about HauntCon. We'll see you guys next week.